This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Good evening. You are tuned in to The People Speak on BBS Radio Network. I am your host, Sophia Ray. Listen to The People Speak online or call in by phone at 716-748-0144. The People Speak encourages listener participation by phoning in comments or questions during the show at 1-888-429-5471. Please join us every Tuesday, 8 p.m. Central Time. Let's take a stroll down memory lane that brings us way back into a lost time shrouded with mystical mysteries of ancient Atlantis, which has been a pinnacle controversy among historians, scholars, researchers, philosophers, scientists, archaeologists, geologists, and even psychics. Edgar Cayce was a well-known medium psychic of the 20th century. He used his mystical abilities to tap into the Atlantean time and gain into spiritual insight. Cayce would induce himself into a hypnotic trance-like state, which he earned the nick for the Sleeping Prophet. In 360 BC, philosopher Plato told about his story of Atlantis. And this story is about an advanced civilization that met its doom day, and it's said to be a submerged continent in the Atlantic Sea. What was so powerful enough to wipe out this entire continent that has stretched from the West Africa, maybe to all the way to the Bahamas? Are ancient times living amongst us here and now? Who were these Atlanteans? How are the Atlanteans connected to the lost continent of Lemuria that preceded them? Have discoveries been made to this location? Well, tonight we have two special guests with us. We have Gail Cayce, who is the granddaughter of Edgar Cayce, and we have with us, along with her, joining us. I'm sorry, I'm getting a brain fart here, but it's Douglas Richards. Richard and Douglas, oh my goodness. You guys have written the mysteries of Atlantis, and I'm excited and delighted to introduce you on People Speak. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you.
That was just a mouthful. I am so sorry. Go ahead and tell me, Gail, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
And I'm really delighted to have you on, and I would like to know where and how did you guys come up with the idea to use your grandfather's writings the archives of his readings to start this book?
Well, probably the idea came from my father, Edgar Evans. He had written a previous book, Edgar Cayce on Atlantis. Edgar Cayce on Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
And that was some time back. And he was very interested in writing a book, or another one with regard to it, that updated scientific discoveries that seemed to indicate or point to some of the information in the readings as being, or seeming to verify or confirm some of the information that was in there, both geologically and archaeologically.
Now, I read the book, and You guys, the book had mentioned Blavatsky, who was a renowned member of the Theosophical Society and who introduced theosophy to America. And she has, in her work on the Secret Doctrine, she has an extensive amount of research into Atlantis. Now, was Edgar Cayce a researcher of hers?
Edgar Cayce was what you would call a... You're talking about my father or Edgar Cayce?
Your grandfather.
Yeah, my grandfather. He was not a researcher on any of that. He was what you would call a medical clairvoyant,
mm-hmm.
a psychic. He gave what they called readings for individuals, mainly, who had illness.
Mm-hmm.
He also ended up giving readings that were called life readings. That's out of that material that a good deal of the information on Atlantis came, as well as some specific readings with regard to what was Atlantis exactly.
Now, Mr. Richard, what was your partake in this, in the writings of this book here?
Well, all three of us kind of got together. We started out with the material that Edgar Evans Cayce had put together for his original book, Edgar Cayce on Atlantis, and then expanded that with new research. And I had been on a couple of expeditions to the Bahamas where the Edgar Cayce readings said the remains of Atlantis would be found. So I was able to add some of that to the book, too, in terms of what had been found up to the point that we wrote the original version of the book, and then we updated it a couple more times.
In The Secret Doctrine, Blavatsky's, she had given accounts in locations where the pyramid of Atlantis was located. And this is said to be in the Azores Islands, just right off of near Portugal, just right off the coast of Portugal. Are you aware, back in October 2013, an elderly gentleman was out sailing on his yacht, and his GPS system had picked up the pyramid that submerged underwater there?
I'm not sure how a GPS system could pick up a pyramid, because they just pick up the satellites and tell you where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Hadn't heard about that one, but a lot of people have found interesting underwater ruins all over the place. In fact, there are researchers like Graham Hancock who in his books have said that there was a worldwide civilization that was submerged as sea level rose. And so a lot of these locations could possibly be Atlantis. In the Cayce readings, he mentions in one of the readings the Theosophists, but his own perspective was that the easiest place to find remains of Atlantis would be near the island of Bimini in the Bahama Islands, which was all above water at the time that he gave for Atlantis and then went underwater as the sea level rose. So his story was a little bit different from Blavatsky's, although he does mention theosophy in the readings.
Mm-hmm. Well, theosophists do give accounts to many areas around in which believed to be that it was such a big land there, so I'm sure there was remnants spread out all over. The Lemurians were preceded before the Atlanteans. Have you discovered or went into any research on that?
Well, Cayce talked a little about the Lemurians. We really didn't talk about it in the book, but there are quite a few Cayce readings on Lemuria, and the idea would be that that was an earlier civilization in the Pacific. Again, we didn't do much in our book on that, but that was something that Cayce talked about a little bit, not as much as Atlantis, but he talked about Lemuria in the Pacific.
See, in the occult, that the Atlanteans were of the fourth root race, and they were on the fourth continent. Lemuria was where the is claimed to be where humans had evolved from, and comes from the third root race. And I know Cayce had spoken. It talks about the root races in the book. Is it any different than what the occult? In terms of the occult?
Well, what you're mainly referring to, I think, is theosophy,
mm-hmm.
primarily Blavatsky's work, some of Rudolf Steiner's anthroposophy. And the Cayce readings are, again, a little bit different. I don't know all the specifics of what the theosophists think, but the Cayce readings were They mention root races, but the main story of Atlantis was that it existed as a continent in the Atlantic, again, mm-hmm. Lemuria in the Pacific. He didn't, as I recall, give much in the way of dates for Lemuria in the Pacific. For Atlantis, he talked about several destructions by volcanoes and other things, mm-hmm. The last one coming around 10,000 B.C. And that tends to correspond pretty well to when geologists say that sea level was rising and putting the Bahamas underwater. It used to be one great big Bahama, and then it turned into islands as sea level rose. And so that's what we were mainly focusing on, was the Casey version of Atlantis, mm-hmm. Rather than theosophical version.
Well, his version is very, very similar, and it's very similar, because he's using the root races as, you know, theosophists, and he's, you know, a lot of what he says sounds just like what theosophy says, and he talks about the children of the Law of One, and he also says the sons of Belial. Is that correct? And it's so referring to light and dark, in which it's believed to believe that Atlanteans were sorcerers, and they were the ones that introduced astronomy, and I'm pretty sure this is where ancient Egypt had received the information. Does this make sense to you?
According to the readings, and again, it's an unusual story. There were about three different destructions of Atlantis. The first one about 50,000 B.C., the other 25,000 B.C., and then, like Doug said, the last and final one around 10,000. And I think probably, and of course they mentioned that too, that throughout each one of those destructions there were migrations of individuals from Atlantis to other lands, Egypt as well as the Americas.
And the mystery is where the destructions are coming from, and it's not known if it's coming from a technology or if it's coming from natural events. Are we picking? Is this more of a technology issue that they were abusing technology and it created destruction? Because we look at catastrophes today of earthquakes and hurricanes, and they haven't came close to wiping out entire continents. Pole shifts are probably maybe the closest thing that we can think of that could, other than a device of a technology that's way beyond our control and power.
Well, the Casey readings actually talk about both. Is that, as Gail was saying, there were three different destructions, and I think it was the first one he pretty well identified it being a pole shift and ice and that sort of thing. But the last one, as I recall, was he talked about a great crystal that they used as a power source that was tuned too high, and that was at least in part responsible for that destruction. So he talked about both in his readings.
Yeah, it was a combination of both, I think.
Are ancient times living amongst us right now? We see with what's going on in Switzerland with CERN, with the Hadron Particle Collider. Does this sound like anything that maybe that was perhaps rediscovered in the 40s and put to use to now that could have been used in these prehistoric times? Your opinion?
Let's see. I guess I'll go. Actually, it's really Gail's father, Edgar Evans, that knew a lot about this, because he actually was an engineer. And so he researched some of the things that Edgar Casey talked about. And some of the things that are in the Casey readings turned out to be things that the readings identified as were going to happen again. And that seemed to have to do with some of the technology that was being developed. And so it's possible that that the Casey readings were referring to technologies back then that would be rediscovered. It's hard to target exact technologies because the readings aren't all that specific about how they worked.
They're pretty vague to a certain degree. I know Dad was often saying it sounded very much like at least one of the things they described, like lasers. But, again, I the little bit that I have read with regard to it in the readings is very difficult, like Doug said, to determine exactly what it is and was that they were dealing with, though it was obviously a technology that's far more advanced than what we have right now.
Indeed, indeed. What it seems like that's going on here is that a technology from the era has been rediscovered, and that they have created or bringing back a recreated time of perhaps like the Golden Age now. And so Edgar Casey's readings had given a lot of insight perhaps to what is to come or what has to come. Is there anything that he has that you guys can maybe expound on that has came to light that he's maybe predicted?
Well, what's interesting is that a lot of books have focused on Casey's predictions, and a lot of them are things that are very possible to happen, especially his predictions of earth changes in various locations, earthquakes in California and such. What's interesting that the time scale seems to be pretty far off. That is, he made a lot of the predictions in the 1930s, and they haven't happened yet, but it's certainly possible that they could happen. And so we've got a chapter in the book that Gail wrote, and I'll let her talk about that, about the probabilities of these things.
Yeah, the main thing that I was wrote about was the research that's been done in Egypt. According to the readings, like the very last destruction, 10,000 B.C., a large amount of folks immigrated, or Atlanteans immigrated, or flew to Egypt for refuge, and supposedly they took their records. And there's a lot in the material about the fact that they're, or about the, supposedly that there is a hall of records that they left in Egypt, and then it would appear that they were under, or they're to be found. He makes the comments that the hall of records exists and that they're to be found, in a sense, when they're ready, when it's time to. According to him, some of this is under or in the cavities underneath the left paw of the Sphinx. Again, if you read all of this stuff, he's putting the building of the Great Pyramid, et cetera, back far, far, far further than what Egyptologists would say. Their whole time span, it goes back perhaps maybe 4,000 years, if that much. The research that I find most interesting in all of this was the carbon dating that was done by, well, there's several other different ones that were done, but the one that I think most interesting is when they did try carbon dating the pyramid to see the age of it. Through those that dating, while they didn't come out with a time, you know, back as far as Mr. Casey said, 10,000 years, the time that they did come up with was greater than what the Egyptologists would place it at. So it would appear to have been older, whether or not the carbon samples that they took were that of just repairs done on the pyramid or the actual pieces of the, you know, they obtained pieces or samples of the original, I don't know. The interesting thing is that the material at the top of the the pyramid was much, much older than that at the bottom. So I just find that rather interesting.
There have been is older than the pyramids themselves, too, right?
Well, what's really interesting about that is that when we originally wrote the book, nobody knew much except for the carbon dating of the Great Pyramid that Gail just talked about. But since then, a couple people have found some very interesting things. A man named Robert Bovall had done basically an astronomical analysis of some astronomical alignments in the Pyramid and Sphinx complex and was concluding that at least the plan for it, if not the actual building, dated back to the time that Casey gave, which was around 10,000 BC or so, as opposed to 2700 BC, which was what the Egyptologists were saying. And then a geologist, Robert Schock, looking at the Sphinx and the erosion patterns, said it had to be much, much older than the dates that the conventional Egyptologists said. And so they created quite a bit of a stir among the Egyptologists, but this was serious archaeologists and geologists talking about this, and it tended to confirm the Casey readings that these sites were much, much older than anyone currently believed. Unfortunately, no one has yet managed to find the Hall of Records underneath the Sphinx, largely due to political reasons about drilling holes under the Sphinx.
What seems to be happening here is that there's an ancient prehistoric technology that seems to be the cosmos, and they're creating structures onto Earth that are giving a power of suggestion to these placements of the stars in the cosmos. And what seems to be happening here is the Sphinx is like a guard dog of the Anubis, giving the Anubis being the Sirius star and the most brightest star in the cosmos. Has anyone connected Anubis to the Sphinx that you're aware of?
Well, that gets way beyond what I know. The person who's the real expert on all of that is Robert Bovall. He's written a couple of books that talk about all this and has done extensive astronomical correlations with the features of Egypt.
Well, it all leads to the stars eventually, because it's part of who we are, the universe, and I guess that wouldn't it be part of the research? I know there wasn't much said in the book here, anything about astronomy, and which the Atlanteans were taught to the Egyptians, and because I believe when destruction started to come, they migrated into different places. We could see this with the Mayans, the Incas, perhaps even in China that is untold of right now. And that's the other thing. What's the secret? It seems to be a lot more known than what we are told. Is there a reason for this that maybe you want to give your opinions on?
I'm not quite sure
what you mean. One of the things in the Casey readings, and Gail might have an opinion on this too, is there's really not much about the astronomy in the Casey readings. A lot of the most interesting stuff has been done by people like Robert Bovall and others since we did the book that tends to confirm that there was much more ancient things than anyone had thought. There are some pretty active people working on that thing. Again, the names that come to mind immediately are Robert Bovall and Graham Hancock, who have looked at this idea of ancient technological civilizations. And I'm sure there are other people working on that, too.
Go ahead, Gail. You're going to say...
Well, no, I mean, the book itself doesn't go in, like Doug said, at all into the astrological or astronomy aspects. It's basically based on what geographically and geologically and archaeologically have been discovered to point to the validity or invalidity of the material information given within the material.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we can try to understand and comprehend as far back as possible, then we can understand more of who we are now. The book was interesting. Are you going to re-update this book at all?
I don't know. We haven't talked about it, actually.
I haven't talked about it or thought about it. Quite frankly, it seems like my mind is elsewhere right now.
I know.
New grandchild.
My mind is elsewhere, too, and I can't keep it placed in one spot. It hasn't risen as a thought or even going back. Are you still researching this, Douglas?
I think my father was probably far more active in trying to keep track in terms of events that would update it than I was. Now, I don't know, Doug, whether you've been trying to keep...
Well, what I've been keeping track of the things that are most closely related to what the readings talked about, my impression is in Egypt right now the political situation has kind of made everything grind to a halt in terms of doing the archaeology. In the Bahamas, actually for quite a few years, there have been a number of people exploring there, and some interesting things found. Unfortunately, it's very expensive to explore, and so nothing certain. But, for example, several years ago, a group of us, under the auspices of the ARE, chartered a submarine to go looking for some things based on things we'd seen on side-scan sonar underwater near the island of Bimini in the Bahamas. And there are some very unusual-looking rock formations down there that might be something archaeological. But it's very hard to work down in those depths, especially on a very small budget. So a lot of that is also kind of on hold for funding reasons. But several people have been exploring down there. And, again, a few very unusual things have been found, but no one knows really whether they're true archaeological sites or just very unusual geological formations.
What about the Azori Islands? That's pretty much where everybody is avoiding. It's almost like people have discovered that part of a few times in history, and it almost seems like they were gagged quiet.
Well, I think awful lot of it has to do actually with funding. Is, for example, in the Bahamas, there's been no problems along those lines. It's more that it's just very expensive to do the exploration. I don't know much about what's happening in the Azores right now. You mentioned someone who discovered a pyramid there. But it's an expensive place to work in because you got to get there. The Bahamas are nice because it's about a half-hour plane flight from the Miami area, and so it's much easier to get over there to do some work, but it's still quite expensive. But a place like the Azores really requires some major exploration work. So I'd be curious to know about this person who found the pyramid. I hadn't heard about that. But that sounds quite interesting.
Yeah, it was an elderly gentleman from Spain, I believe. And what's really interesting is that there seem to be more connections as if that it was always known about that location, and they have given a power of gesture and suggestion to that location in bringing it back alive here in America. But before we can even go into that, and I want to go into some more things, and after when we come back from this break here, I'm going to take it away here, and we'll be back just after this moment.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
With over 150 million registered users, PalTalk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 PalTalk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining PalTalk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Hi, I'm Richard Belzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
Today's school libraries are filled with endless opportunities. With access to print and digital materials, the latest technologies, and the guidance of a school librarian, our children are empowered with the tools they need to succeed in school and beyond. I'm Julianne Moore. Join me in celebrating all of the ways that school libraries and librarians are transforming learning for our students. For more information on how you can become involved, visit the American Association of School Librarians at aasl.org.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
And we are back on The People Speak. This is your host, Sophia Ray. We are here with Gail Casey and Douglas Richards. And we are talking about Atlantis. And let's drop Atlantis for a little bit here. And let's go into who your grandfather was, the remarkable psychic abilities he had, and the coming of the Edgar Casey Association and Enlightenment Research Foundation. Can you give us some insight on that?
On the foundation?
The
ARE was formed back in the 30s, I believe, basically to protect, to a certain degree, Mr. Casey from being arrested for practicing, you know, fortune telling.
Well, yeah.
No, I mean, really, that was one of the reasons, and that was the main thing, is that a person asked for this and paid for a reading. Most of the material that Mr. Casey gave was mainly medical. People were, as a child, as I understood it, he wanted to help people, and there's a whole story in terms of how he got found or discovered the gift that he had of giving readings. One of the best stories, one of the best books, I think, biography of him is There is a River by Thomas Chagrew, partly because that man had readings himself that basically saved his life. But a good, I would say, 90% of the material is physical. People would write in with regard to problems they had. All he needed was the individual's name and address, and somehow he was able to, in a sense, it seemed almost as if he were within the body. He could tell what the individual's problems were and also give a diagnosis and a remedy, or what followed, treatment to follow to get rid of whatever the problem was. And I know Dad always said if a person didn't do anything, nothing happened. If they did it halfway, they usually got halfway results. And if they did it completely, they usually got complete results. I think he was pretty much a believer in that simply because he had experienced that himself.
In the late 1800s in Europe, the Queen Elizabeth, she had stopped and put a halt to holistic healing. And anybody who was caught practicing holistic healings were persecuted and perhaps even murdered and killed. Was this a fear of your grandfather's?
I don't believe so. There's a difference between, when you say holistic, you're talking about
natural healings.
When you say holistic, I usually think of holistic medicine, which is something entirely different.
Okay.
I don't know that there was any connection between the banning of holistic, what you called holistic healing, or this at all.
We have a caller on the line. Let's take this into caller. Caller, your name and where you're from?
Hi, this is Mike in California. It's good to hear Gail and Doug speak about the mysteries of Atlantis. I had a question. When I read The Sleeping Prophet, one of the things, the main ideas that stuck out to me was that Edgar Casey seemed to be deeply religious. I believe I read that somewhere that he read the Bible dozens of times. And yet he, when he did these readings, what came forward was this idea of reincarnation, if I remember correctly. And that doesn't seem to fit in with Christian religion. I was wondering, was there a separation between Edgar Casey, the sleeping prophet who gave these readings, and Edgar Casey, the devout Christian? Because, you know, there seemed to have been a conflict between... Go ahead and answer that.
I don't think so. I think in terms of giving readings and helping people would have been something that was pretty Christian. The whole idea of reincarnation, as I understand it, came about when somebody asked for a reading from Mr. Casey on astrology. And he made the comment in that particular reading that while astrology did have influences on people, not nearly as much influence as their previous incarnations. And as a result of that, they ended up beginning to have what they called life readings, where he would have a person's name, and he would, he said that he only, within the readings, he was only giving previous incarnations of the individual that would be helpful in this particular lifetime. And
did he ever give himself a reading, or was that possible?
Oh, yes, so he gave himself many readings.
Okay, I'd like to hear about that. Thank you very much.
What, if you're saying about his reading?
Yes, what was his readings? Who was he in a past life? Was he, what was his position in Atlantis? Why in particular was he the one?
I'm going to be real honest with you on that whole thing. When I was first working, in fact, when I first read There is a River, and I was very interested in my father, and you know, tell me what a life reading is, let me see yours. And his, he was extremely, in fact, kind of hammered that into me, is that, that's my reading. You know, that's my life, and I'm not real sure I want to show it to you. After an awful lot of badgering from me, he let me read it, or at least one of them, but he also was extremely, for him, the confidentiality of a lot of that material was extremely important to him. But, Doug, you probably, and I've never made a real attempt on my own as a result to try to read all of Mr. Casey's readings. I know some of what it said, but according to his reading, well, you go ahead, Doug. You probably know more.
Edgar Casey probably gave, I forget how many it was, I think a little less than 200 readings for himself. There's an awful lot there.
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount.
And they range from...
Are we talking about junior or senior?
Senior.
Okay. Yeah. He gave a little less than 200 readings, I think, and many of them were health readings. He had various health problems throughout his life, and his readings helped with that. And some of them were life readings talking about past lives. And some of the best known that are in the books, he was a priest in Egypt, was one of the best known. And he had various other lifetimes and could trace some of the various conflicts in this life to past lives, which was often what came out in the life reading. So, for example, many of his friends and supporters also had past lives in Egypt, and some of the conflicts they had back in Egypt 10,000 years ago were the same conflicts that were happening today. And so he was giving advice in all the readings to himself as well as the other people about how they could do a better job this lifetime than they did in the ancient past. So that's the kinds of things he was getting out of the readings. And again, many of his readings were medical readings for himself for various medical conditions.
Did he know the name of the
I have one last question, and then you can go on and get off the phone. Did Edgar Casey ever talk about extraterrestrials? Because I feel like, you know, since he was able to access the Akashic records, were these records just relating to the planet Earth, or was there a multitude of other planets, solar systems, et cetera?
Okay. Yeah, I don't believe he was ever asked that.
Yeah, I'm not aware that, that anyone ever asked him that. Remember, he was giving readings back
in the
1930s, and nobody talked much about extraterrestrials then. that didn't become a big thing until the 40s and after, so I don't think the people asked him.
You said that he became aware of a past life of being a priest from Egypt. Was there a name given?
Ra-Ta was the name of the priest.
Ra-Ta. And Ra-Ta. So was he able to go into previous lives before Egypt, maybe into sentient life?
Like Doug said, the whole idea of giving individuals a life reading and telling them who they were or whatever in the past. He always said, he didn't give any incarnation that wasn't hopeful to the individual in this particular lifetime. The whole idea behind life readings was to give you a little bit of a snapshot, if you will, of, like Doug said, the struggles and the problems that you had in the past lives and the opportunities that you had in this life to solve or resolve the problem.
Like clearing karma away.
Yeah, karma. Well, I think something that was kind of interesting or funny down that along that line, I know there was a man who asked the question, when did the problem with my wife start? And his answer was about 10,000 years ago. Evidently, they were still trying to work out the difficulties that they were having in a relationship or with their present relationship. I know Mr. Casey always said most everybody you come into contact with is someone that you've known in the past. Probably individuals that you have a very close relationship with or individuals you've had a close relationship with in the past. You have an opportunity in this particular lifetime to solve the problem or to work through the difficulties that you've had in the past.
Now, do you think that perhaps your grandfather's soul had reincarnated right now? Do you feel any connections to him?
In terms of, you know, I haven't got the slightest as to whether he's reincarnated now. I would assume that... Well, actually, I never knew Mr. Casey, so I can't say that I had any problems to work out with him.
Does your father speak of him or having any connections or being able to contact, you know, his afterlife?
Yeah, I can answer that with one word: no.
Now, is your father a reader as well as his father?
No, he didn't give readings.
And are either of you into the psychic mediumship?
Well, I'm interested in learning about it as a researcher. I never have tried to do anything like that. Mainly, I'm interested in studying it.
Yeah,
in
same
studying.
Here.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I know people always would ask you, Lynn, or Dad, and you know, do you have any of his abilities? And I would say the answer is no on both counts. But I think, too, Mr. Casey said again and again that we all have the ability to be quite psychic. The thing is, it's something that you have to work at.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that comes, I think, as a result of just that.
Now, are you living. Still involved with the Association for Research and Enlightenment, either of you?
No,
well, I'm
not. Go ahead, Doug.
Okay. I'm a professor at Atlantic University, which is a branch of the Association for Research and Enlightenment. It's an accredited online university, Atlantic University.
And where does that name come from?
Well, the name of Atlantic University, actually, Atlantic University has been around since the early 1930s and was started by Edgar Casey and a couple of his supporters. And in the Great Depression, basically, all the funding went away. This tends to happen. And it closed down for a long time and then was reactivated in the early 1980s and is now an accredited online program offering a master's degree in transpersonal studies.
Now, Mr. Douglas, are you interested in continuing this research on Atlantis at all and maybe bringing it to the next level?
Well, I'm always staying in touch with what's happening. The biggest problem... as with most things in the world now, has been funding. A few years ago, we went in a submarine looking for Atlantis near the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. More recently, we had an underwater unmanned submersible that was taking pictures down there. And there's, again, several of us who are quite interested in making this happen. A man named John Van Auken, who's at the Association for Research and Enlightenment, has kind of taken charge of some of that. Another man named Greg Little and his wife Laura Little have done a lot with this. And so there's a group of us still quite interested, and it just turns out to be pretty expensive. When we had the submarine, and that was back over 15 years ago, that was about $10,000 a day just to take that thing down there. So this isn't the sort of thing you apply for big grants from most places. And so that's the main limiting factor often is funding.
Well, I'm sure there are ways to work around where you can actually do the research without having to take the expeditions. But it seems like the expeditions are not heading in the right directions. And this is just purely from my opinion, but I believe that there's enough signs happening right now and today that gives very clear and strong indications that Atlantis is still part of today, and it is still and it does exist. But I believe that there is more to there's more to it, and it seems like that it's almost as if there's perhaps like they're recreating Atlantis here on Earth right now by using perhaps the astronomy and astrology and bringing it back to life. It doesn't make any sense where I just feel like there's more to the story that's not being told that can be told. Well, and I don't think there's money. Money doesn't have to be an involvement.
Well, part of the point of the Casey readings is that, oh, he did encourage some people to go and explore there. A lot of what he was really doing was, in the Atlantis readings, telling people that they had had a past life in Atlantis and had messed up, and here they were back working with this technology again, and they better not mess up again because the technology can be very dangerous. And so quite a few of the readings mentioning Atlantis really were just given for individuals with a lot of warnings in them about playing with dangerous technology, as well as a few that encouraged people to explore.
Well, absolutely. We have ancient texts that talk about this technology that has even destroyed planets of our solar system that's not even part of the solar system no more. And I believe that perhaps that could have been part of the technology that was used in the Atlantean times. And they were abusing their power. And therefore, when you abuse your power, poof, you know, you're doomed and it's gone. But it seems like that technology is up and running once more again right now today. In fact, we can look into Switzerland at CERN, what is known now as the Big Bang Machine. Have you heard, or what's your opinion on that? The Big Bang Machine that's recreating the particle collider and recreating the Big Bang.
Right. Well, you're talking about the Large Hadron Collider at CERN that found the Higgs particle back a year or so ago. And Casey didn't talk explicitly about particle accelerators as far as I know. His was more focused on what he called the Great Crystal, which, again, may resemble lasers. Edgar Evans, Casey, saw a lot of parallels there. And the idea was that it was tuned too high and caused major earthquakes, which destroyed Atlantis. So some of the readings were warning people, if you mess with this technology, then you could cause some serious damage. Exactly identifying the technology can be kind of hard, but that was the general theme, that Atlanteans were being reborn in the present time and were playing with dangerous technology that they should be careful of.
Stephen Hawking is warning about this machine as well. Go ahead, Gail. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I'm just saying in terms of technology, he would, like Doug said, he would say there are many, many people. It seems like you come back to associate with each other, that a lot of Atlanteans, if you believe in reincarnation indeed, are here now, that they have the ability to do just that, develop or abuse or use technology. I mean, if you look just in the 40s, development of the atom bomb, et cetera, we do have technology at our fingertips that we could destroy the world with. We're kind of nervous about it right now. Look at the peace treaty we're making with Iran. So we are in a situation where we could destroy a good deal of the Earth via the technology that we've developed. The whole thing with regard to a lot of these readings, again, he was warning. They were two specific people, and often the quotes, the things that came out of that we use in this book are a little more general. But again, it's the same thing. Beware, if you will, of your abilities. Use them. Don't abuse them.
Absolutely. I agree with that. And I think that we are heading towards destruction and I think we're being careless. The scientists are being careless And I'm not quite sure what's going to happen from here on out.
Well, I think too, Mr. Casey, again and again, would direct it back to the individual to whom he gave a reading for, and I guess direct it back to each one of us individually. What are you doing to be positive in your own life?
Now, you mentioned, let's go back to your grandfather before. We're coming to the end of the show here really soon. You never met your grandfather at all, and so...
No, he died before I was born.
Okay, do you did your father share any remarkable stories about him, and that kind of makes it feel like that you know him or close to him? Or
probably one of the ones that strike me, I remember him talking. This, again, is just the use of his abilities or his gift to give physical readings. I know his older son, Hugh Lynn, when Mr. Casey had gone to Selma to kind of get away from giving the readings, he was upset with how people were utilizing him, like for asking horse races, that type of thing, instead of getting physical readings, and he decided he wasn't going to give them anymore. His son was playing with flash powder, and it blew up in his face and his eyes. Well, the doctors basically said he would never see again, and his thing was, please give me a reading, Dad. And he gave him a reading with regard to how to cure it. They followed the reading, and his eyesight came back. The same thing happened with Dad standing in front of a fire. He said his pajamas caught on fire, and he burnt severely the back of his legs and back, and they had a reading, followed the reading, and again, he was basically cured. So seeing again and again people who he knew and himself as well benefit from the material that Mr. Casey gave, I think his describing and telling me those things were made it more real to me. But I think probably, too, watching my father, if you will, having read a little bit of his readings and watching him become the person who seemed to basically fulfill a lot of the suggestions in the readings was probably most important to me.
He sounds like he was a remarkable man, very caring, loving, devoted. He was a disciple. He was involved with the disciple of Jesus. That's something that I'm really not familiar with. Are you involved with that too as well?
Mr. Casey, my father, and Hugh Lynn were all Presbyterians. I think that one of them, I believe Hugh Lynn, had a reading. Well, I don't like to go into readings about other people. It was a
person. Yeah, and I don't blame you either.
It was impressed very hard upon me by my father that the readings were confidential. Particularly with regard to the life readings, to always, anything you read, to try to do just that, maintain the confidentiality of the individual who had them. All the material there is there for your benefit and to help people help themselves, as well as be the best thing I know from my father's viewpoint, is to research to prove or disprove the validity that's there, particularly with regard to the medical readings.
Fascinating. All very fascinating. Gail and Douglas, I can't thank you enough for being here. We are at the end of our show. It was a pleasure having you both on. Thank you very much. And I want to thank our listeners and our engineer, Doug Newsom. Please join us next Tuesday with Congressman Paul Findlay. And let us unite through love and light. Take care and be good to one another. Good night.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the steeple, by the relief of us, I saw my people. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, the Redwood Forest.